Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. The Jewish Museum has a new exhibition called New York, 1962 to 1964, that examines how this two-year stretch led to New York City becoming a beacon for modern art, and how artists like Warhol, Jasper Johns, and Faith Ringgold were responding to increasing turbulence in the United States, whether it was the Civil Rights Movement, President Kennedy's assassination, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the list goes on. The show, which features 150 pieces, including Warhol's Two Marilyns and a typical 1960s box TV set playing old commercials and newscasts, it was described by The New Yorker as, quote, a spectacular historical show of art and documentation of a time in which, quote, artists, writers, dealers, patrons, and assorted intellectuals alert to momentous changes in the world at large rub shoulders at parties that were a lot more stimulating than those attended by my second generation New York school coterie. Join us now to share more about New York 1962 to 1964, now at the Jewish Museum until January 8th, is Claudia Gould, president of the Jewish Museum. Claudia, welcome.
Hi.
And Darcy Alexander, the museum's chief curator. Darcy, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
So the show, in part, demonstrates the rapid propulsion of New York's pop art scene with Warhol and Lichtenstein and Steinstein, I would never know, and were inspired by popular culture and mass media at the times. Claudia, why were the years 62 to 64 the moment that this movement took off?
Well, I mean, let's go back a little bit and say maybe perhaps why us, why now, which is, you know, why the Jewish Museum addresses such exhibitions. So if you don't mind, if I could just go back a little bit and give a preview on why our museum would be doing this. And then maybe Darcy can move on to the next. So in 1962, the museum hired a very renegade art historian named Alan Solomon, who he was a very curious man and curious and a bit of a rebel at the same time. And he also found an opportunity where other museums weren't doing this, is showing the artists of the period and of the time. And so with pretty much of a carte blanche, he turned the museum into, I would say, the it place of the period. So he was at the museum for 3 years, 1962, 1963, and 1964. He departed right after the Venice Biennale, which he was invited to curate, and Rauschenberg won the Venice Biennale. So we decided to bracket these years, talk about them through our own history, but then at the same time to broaden it out. We invited curator, art historian, impresario Germano Celant, who to curate and to sort of give over our history to him. And it was his decision to not just focus on the art that was happening at the time, but to bridge it out to wider culture. So wider culture meaning not just, you know, dance and poetry and music, but then also bracket it with, you know, artists respond and we all respond to the environment of which we live in. So it, you know, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis that you mentioned, the March on Washington, feminist movement, which, you know, interestingly enough, and, you know, Betty Friedan and all the others, like how we've gone back just, you know, 70 years, just in the last few years, last few months. Mm. And also looking at, you know, you walk from the Martin Luther King room, the March on Washington, and then you move into the Kennedy assassination, and there's just, you know, it actually brings it all back to you, and you understand in a larger picture why artists were doing the work they were doing. And so I'm going to pass this now on to Darcy after giving kind of a kind of preview of why we would take this on. I also want to mention, I know that
the reason I'm laughing is that was my next set of second questions about Andrew.
Oh,
so now okay. It's just funny. Go ahead, please.
So, well, we're, you know, reading minds. you know, at the same time,
Alan, if I...
you know, Jews were not allowed, you know, to be on boards. There weren't those opportunities. So also, dealers didn't have a lot of say, Jewish dealers that were, you know, whether it's Ileana Sonnabend or Sidney Janis and Leo Castelli, Arnie Glimcher, you know, weren't heavily involved in museums because the fact that they were Jewish. And there were certainly weren't any Jews on boards. So that all changed because you were introducing the contemporary art world, and there were collectors that were buying this work that were Jewish, donating to museums, becoming, you know, the upper middle class, the wealthy in New York, and passing it on to the cultural institutions in a philanthropic way, which brings us, you know, full circle to, you know, New York today. So now I'm going to pass it on to Darcy, now that I've given my director's forward and curator, she can take it from here. We're a good team.
Well, thank you. I don't want to elaborate too much on what you've already said, Claudia, but I think getting back to Alison, your question about, you know, we think about the 60s, we think of pop art, and often we actually think about the later part of the 60s when we think about that decade. We think of like the Summer of Love and you know, Sgt. Pepper, and really we're looking at a time very early in the decade when artists were still very open. Like our categories that we think about, like pop art and minimalism, they were just sort of nascent. All of these artists were experimenting with elements drawn out of the city life. New York was their hub. And I think it was really important for us to make an exhibition about New York City. You know, we had to push the show out a little bit because of the pandemic, but I don't think we could have asked for better timing. You know, so much about the 1960s was this kind of awakening of the city to this vibe and this culture of the material relics of the street and this incredible, you know, laboratory that the city provided. And in a way, we're kind of in a moment of reawakening as a city again post-pandemic. And so we actually had a very fortuitous timing of this show to be a city exhibition about New York at the Jewish Museum.
Darcy, how did you think about the role of mass media when you were putting together this show?
Well, obviously, you know, mass media was a huge influence on artists. Many artists were drawn out of the studio, you know, kind of coming out of a period where many artists that are associated with movements such as abstract expressionism, we think about people like Jackson Pollock, they really wanted to get literally into the streets and into the culture. And so a lot of the works that you see in the exhibition take inspiration from news stories, from television, from movies, because so much was happening in the world. And the way that that information was being distributed was through the media. So if you wanted to have a show about artists engaging the real world and engaging what was happening in New York City, that information was being channeled through media outlets. So it was very natural that artists would pick up on images that were circulating of Kennedy, of Jackie, of Martin Luther King, of the Birmingham riots. So all of these things that have become these images that are so potent have been recast and reinterpreted and remade in many of the works on view.
Claudia, if someone is looking at this exhibition and considering what Darcy just said about mass media, how might this exhibition be sort of a bit of a thought exercise when we think about what media means today, social media? The proliferation of how people get misinformation through online media?
Ha, very good question. You know, it's really hard to answer that. I mean, you're talking about fiction. So,
good point.
you're talking about fiction. So I think that, you know, artists always, you know, pull from fiction. So, and they always have. Well, like Darcy was talking about the opposite of, you know, taking from real life, taking from world events, but, you know, fiction has always been there and fantasy. So why don't I leave it at that and keep social media out of this and fake news? I mean, you know, what is real? I don't know. It's just, You know, we could have a long discussion about that, but maybe Darcy wants to talk about it.
Well, I would just say there's first of all, one of the things you realize when you're in the show that is that you're in the black and white era. So like color TV didn't happen until mid to late 1960s. All the film footage is in black and white. And there's this great moment on the second floor that is the newsreel footage where Walter Cronkite is talking about the assassination of Kennedy. And it's the recognition live that the president has been killed. And it feels really protracted. There are a lot of pauses. It's almost by our standards, like a slow motion. I mean, if this news were happening now, you'd have instantaneous images traveling across a multitude of channels. So one of the things that I was struck by in a way, and what we've noticed of our visitors as they've come through this two-floor exhibition, is that it's slow. And I don't mean slow like boring. It's an incredibly engaging exhibition, but you're really aware that the 1960s were as vital as they were with the rise of feminism and the civil rights movement, also relevant to our current day. It does feel like the distant past in other ways. And part of that is exactly what you're saying, that the media that we're experiencing today is so much more accelerated than it was back then. And that Cronkite tape really underscores that.
I mean, a great point, Darcy. It is like in more real human time. And, you know, Cronkite also was so choked up that he could barely get the words out, you know, to begin with. But, you know, I remember since I was alive during that time, and I, as I said, I was the only staff member who went to the World's Fair that wasn't in nappies or hadn't even actually remembers the World's Fair. But, you know, at the time, my parents and my grandparents thought that everything was happening too fast, that television was going to be, ruining America. People weren't going to be reading books anymore. And I think that, you know, what we look back on what you just said is like, you know, it just depends on where you're standing and where you're sitting. How do you measure that time? So it's all true and all relevant. And, you know, what would they say now?
The name of the exhibition is New York, 1962-1964. It is on view now at the Jewish Museum. My guests are Claudia Gould, president of the Jewish Museum, and Darcy Alexander, chief curator. Darcy, how is the civil rights movement represented in this exhibition?
Well, the civil rights movement is part of obviously a vital part of the chronology. So the show is set up not by artistic movements, but by time. So the first galleries that you go into are 1962. Slowly you make your way through 1963. And of course, those are key dates for the March on Washington and the Birmingham bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church and other incredibly important moments of violence against Black communities, particularly in the South. So when you get to the second floor, there's a room devoted to what was happening in the civil rights movement and how artists were responding. And in particular, I think one of the fascinating parts about that space is that not only were artists working and making incredible works as independent creators like Faith Ringgold and Melvin Edwards, who has this amazing piece, several pieces that are really made around the theme of lynching. They're made of metal and steel, and they often include chains and nails and cables. I mean, they're very, very powerful pieces, but also many of the artists worked as collectives. So there's a section of the show that's devoted to the Spiral Group, which was founded by Romare Bearden. There's another section of the exhibition which looks at Kamuenge, which was a photography collective working, taking a lot of images of New York street life, especially up in Harlem. So in a way, it's kind of the heart and soul of the exhibition, because it is where the art so visibly intersects with the social unrest and the rise of civil rights that, you know, that we're still feeling the reverberations of today. That work feels incredibly fresh and relevant. And it's certainly a space that people really reflect in. So
Claudia, I understand there's some recreations in this exhibition. Would you mind sharing or describing them to our audience? Maybe one of them?
You mean the more vernacular spaces? Is that what you're talking about? Yes, downstairs we have a store window, which was, a blow up of Bonwit Teller. And the background is, so you have to think about how people were dressing at the time. And if you think about Jackie Kennedy, she was wearing very, beautiful couture, beautiful clothing, but it was very conservative. The pillbox hat, the, Givenchy, et cetera. So Jeffrey Bean. And so what the clothing that we decided, so the backdrop is this very conservative window that you would find at the time, like going into, Bergdorf's or Bonwit's and seeing the window. But then the clothing that we're showing is very avant-garde. So there's the Rudy Gernreich topless bathing suit. There's a beautiful Jeffrey Bean that we searched high and low for. That's a long silk yellow flowered kind of halter gown. And just other kind of dresses that were more speaking to how the artists were working. So more forward. If you turn around on the other side, there is an Ames lounge chair and a kind of living room with wallpaper that would be typical of the period, which it was typical of the period. And then playing on the
Roadrunner on TV,
the black and white, TV is absolute, what we were watching from Leave It to Beaver to Roadrunner to the Jetsons to news clips and things like that. And then as you walk upstairs, there is a kitchen with appliances and tables and wallpaper and, we had a lot of fun. Rotary phone. And, right by the kind of Darcy placed it right at the, at the edge where you would have your molding. And then all of us wrote little like numbers. She even wrote her grandmother's phone number at the time. How you write on the newspaper. I mean, on the wallpaper. And then your mother would scream, you can't put the numbers there. So we did that. We made up numbers and didn't make up numbers. And so there are a few vernacular spaces like that, sort of trying to, people laugh at those, like trying to get into the mood. Also, when you first come in, before you enter the galleries, there is a don't walk sign. There is a fire hydrant, a liquor sign from the period flashing on and off. So you're kind of walking in park benches from the period, from Central Park. So you're walking into trying to get into the mood of that time. And if you were living through that time, there's a big smile on your face. And as Peter Sheldahl said, this is a great show for high school students to go to really get a glimpse into the period of which they kind of read about, but here you're sort of you're really walking into.
Darcy, our last minute.
Yeah,
absolutely. In our last minute, what is something you'd like people to pay just an extra 15 seconds of attention to? A detail, a moment, a picture, an object?
Oh, for me? Is this for me?
I was going to ask Darcy that. Yeah, Darcy, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, that is always every curator's worst. Hardest question, because every selection is labored over. I actually think that we already spoke about it a little bit. I think seeing some of that original footage that we have sprinkled through the show, and really understanding that art is not in an ivory tower. Art is not something that's separated from our existence. It's very integrally interwoven into our lives, into our urban fabric, into the social connectivity that we have to one another. And I think that's like one of the main things that we want visitors to experience, is that sense of art being vital, and that period introduced issues that are still with us today, many of them still quite unresolved.
The show is at the Jewish Museum. It is called New York, 1962 to 1964. I've been speaking with Claudia Gould, president of the Jewish Museum, and Darcy Alexander, chief curator. Thank you for sharing the show with us.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
And that's all of it for this hour.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.